Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Derek Warburton is the creative director and co-owner of La Palme magazine. He has his own jewelry line. He's worked as a celebrity stylist, among many other things in life, as you'll hear. He has some great takeaways about the fashion industry itself and other aspects of his life. He is a hustler, so buckle up and enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
All right, so this is a true story that not a lot of people know. I, years ago, you know, because I was living in New York and I was like, it felt like I'd done my run. Like, you need to reinvent yourself. And I have always been able to reinvent. And I'm not afraid. I don't own something. And I'm like, I'm dead to, like, this is it. I roll with the punches. So, you know, and this, like, everything changed in 2008, especially in fashion, because of the crash. And so retail changed forever. The web was coming up and just everything changed. And I saw being a stylist not being as prosperous anymore. And I'm like, you're done. Like, either move over. So that's how the television really started, because we started probably, we started in what, 2007? Right? Because we've been friends 11 years now. Yeah, so it's 2007 we started. And I just saw the change of, and then I got some private clients too for personal shopping. So that took me around the world. And that was major cash. And I was like, I'm not going to go on set. The rates were dropping by the day.
Yeah.
Because every child, you know, it's the internet now. Every kid thinks they're a stylist. Everybody thinks they're a makeup artist. Everyone thinks they're a photographer because they got an iPhone. It's a joke.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we've all worked for 20 something years in this industry and we're like, sit down, dear. But you know, everyone has to start somewhere. So I'm not a hater. I'm like, all right, I'm a motivator.
Yeah.
Keep it moving. What am I going to do?
I'm not a hater. I'm a motivator. I like that.
No, because it's like, uh-huh. Because, you know, I've changed myself so much that if people are hating on me, I just don't, I treat people how I want to get treated and I just keep it moving and f you if you don't get it. Fine, done.
Yeah.
So I had got approached by, have you ever heard of Tony and Tina's Wedding? It was a huge off-Broadway show in the 80s in New York, and it was literally two different places. So it started in a church, and everybody in the audience was involved. And then you went to a restaurant, and it was literally Tony and Tina's wedding. It was like you went to a wedding. It was hilarious.
Okay.
But there's actors and everything. So they moved it to Broadway, and they asked me to do a limited run. Singing, dancing, the whole thing. I know. And I hadn't sung since high school, where I was really trained and doing a lot. But then it was like, oh my God, how am I going to pull this off? And then the show canceled before I even start. Literally, and I had a breakdown and I moved to Key West and lived in a shitty hotel for a month and then looked like Tan Mom by the time I got back to normal.
Tan Mom. I forgot about Tan Mom.
Oh no, for real. For real. Yeah, it was scary.
Can we circle back to the off-Broadway thing?
Yeah.
Were you friends with these people? Were you already doing that?
No. I met them. It was a publicist. My entire life is publicists.
Uh-huh.
Thank God for publicists, or yeah. I'd be still sitting in New Hampshire, like, you know, peeling potatoes, working at the Mac counter or whatever. They don't even have a Mac. That tells you. It's Chanel. I'd
no
work
Mac.
At Chanel at least, or Clinique.
Yeah.
Clinique. Clinique. I know. Pure alcohol. You'll look great. So, no, I had met them and I was hosting a party or something. I did. You know, I've always hosted a lot of parties because it just keeps you out there and it keeps you relevant, you know.
Sure.
So I hosted this party and she was like, I have this fabulous idea. And the one thing I've pride myself on in L.A. and in New York, I can fill a room.
Because you know
that's
a lot
all
of people.
Yes, I know everyone. You know,
gotcha.
The maid to the president.
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
everybody,
yeah.
You know, yeah. And I've always been like that because I'm, you know, Chatty Cathy, whatever.
So you've always been Chatty Cathy?
Oh, yes.
Even like as a little kid?
No. As a kid, I had this really abusive childhood. It was terrible, but I learned so much from it. And when I could finally be myself, there was no stopping me. And that was it. And I just went from there. No, I couldn't even look you in the eye. 14 years old.
Yeah. Wait,
and then
can
I,
we talk
and then
about,
I grew out of that.
Can we talk a little bit about New Hampshire? Did you grow up entirely in New Hampshire?
No, I lived, so basically, quick synopsis, because there's an hour and this isn't a 10-hour gig. I grew up in New Hampshire. My parents got divorced. My mother all of a sudden met this woman. We were all kind of shocked. And then her partner was really abusive. We ended up moving to upstate New York. It was terrible. We ended up in Florida. We were homeless. Nothing. No electric, no water, no sanitation. That's why I'm a Goodwill ambassador for clean water now. And it was literally living in the woods. But I went to school every day and was a straight A student.
Wow.
Yeah.
So wait, you said your mom was married to your father. They got divorced.
Yes.
And then you found out. How old were you when they got divorced?
10.
And then how soon did she start dating?
10 and a half.
Wow.
It was boom, boom. And not a clue. And what's so funny is that, which I've never discussed ever, exclusive, Fox 11, hey. My mother cheated on him with another man, and then all of a sudden she was with a woman. It was crazy.
Wow.
This is like as a child seeing all that. It was just a little nuts. My brother had just died too. So I think it was so much emotional trauma for her. I don't even think you know any of this. Yeah. Yeah, my brother died of SIDS. Sudden infant death syndrome. And it just knocked everyone. And her mother, who was paraplegic, died all within a year. So to lose a child and your mother all at the same time, I just think she lost it.
Yeah.
You know, and then ended up in this relationship for a long time, but couldn't come out. So it was just so many layered things, which I understand where a lot of mental abuse would come from and a lot of abusive things. And then I think by the time we were homeless, which there was no need for, because I could have lived with my dad and I had a new stepmom and a new brother.
Did
everything.
They stay in New Hampshire?
They all did and didn't know anything. I lied. I had to lie. I had to lie about every single thing. Did you take a cookie? No. Like I lied about everything because it was a safety mechanism. And I think that's why I'm such an honest, like brutally honest to a fault. Person now, because I went through all these things as childhood, and I learned how to process them. And then once you learn how to process, you can move forward and live in truth. And I think that's really important for a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of kids that are really suffering. It's like, you know what, once you can process why people treat you the way they do, why you're in a situation you're in, and then you can see over the hump and be able to move forward with it, you can be successful. You can love yourself. And it's really important. You know, I tell myself, I mean, him this morning, we were laughing. I was like, did anyone tell you that they love you today? I love you. You're my friend. I love you. You know, and I think people need to hear that every day, but people need to say it to themselves every day. And that's the first thing I say in the morning, honey. I love you.
I love you, Derek.
I love you, dear. Your name is Kelly.
Yeah.
No, but do you see what I mean? Like, it's really important that you have to step outside of yourself. Because, you know, so many of us, I talk to you, you talk to me. But a lot of us can't process the fact that we can talk to ourselves.
Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
100%.
And so every morning I wake up, and if I don't say it, it knocks my day out. I'm like, you are blessed. You are prosperous. You are grateful. You are kind. I love you. Every day.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I say. And I repeat it because sometimes I need to repeat it because I forget how kind I am and I don't act kind. And, you know, but it's really important to me but that keeps me, because that's something I need to work on, but I'm still processing. See what I mean?
Definitely. And when you're a young kid growing up, the situation that you grow up in, that's all you know.
Yes.
So you're like, okay, this is how the world is. This is how adults act. This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then as you get older and meet other people, see how other relationships are, how other people live, then you start to be like, wait a second.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Exactly.
What's going on in my life? Why did that happen to me? And then it's almost like probably a period of resenting certain things. And then eventually when you start to, I'm just sort of guessing here. And then when you start to get older and maybe think a little bit deeper about the situation itself, maybe you can take a step back and sort of look at it like, okay.
What it did to me, so by the time I left her, and I haven't seen her since the day I left.
Your mom?
I was 15 years old because I was going to commit suicide. That's why I still talk a lot about being suicidal, because I knew it was going to go one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And I was either going to heal or I was going to go. And I was already there by 13, like, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. And it just continued. There were so many crazy things that happened in my life. Just like my, because we lived with my mother's partner's parents.
Oh, wow.
And he ended up in the mental hospital and in jail for holding a place hostage with the shotgun. 6 o'clock news. I'm 13 years old. All these crazy things. Mm-hmm. And I had come from a very good, very lower middle class, but middle class family. Never wanted for anything. I was such a happy kid. And then, boom, all of this comes at you. And then, you know, it's so funny. Everyone always asks, oh, did you have a hard time coming out? And I was like, the opposite. Because I had already went through it with my mother. And I, but living in denial, I'm like, we're all living in the same house. Like, you are partners. There's no question about it. And it was such denial through everything. It was crazy.
Meaning, like,
they weren't gay.
They weren't talking about it out loud.
Oh, the opposite.
Wow.
The opposite. It was such a joke. And it was, like, right in front of us. And they were in love. And, I mean, I honor that. You know, I would never criticize that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just funny because, you know, everyone's like, oh, do you have a coming out story? You know, that's such a, when you're a gay guy, it's like, oh, what's your coming out story?
Yeah.
And I was like, my mother was gay. I handled it. And the only reason why I didn't say anything is because it was a different time and I was more afraid because I had already ran from a situation. So when I moved in with my dad and my stepmom, I was just afraid because I didn't want to get kicked out.
Yeah.
Because I was watching it going on around me.
So,
every gay kid I knew was being kicked out of their house. They were homeless. And I was like, I was already homeless.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I was healing myself.
So you're 15, left Florida, went back up to New Hampshire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I haven't seen her since. And I haven't seen her partner. And I'm getting on the plane. And it's such a movie. I'm literally climbing the stairs. It was like one of those, like climbing the stairs to the staircase. And she yells after me, are you going to say goodbye to Bonnie, which is her partner? And I go, no. And walked up that stairs, and that was it.
Never, ever
spoke to her again or have seen her since. And my mother I've spoken to, and she just, the poor thing, you know, tried to keep manipulating me even after I left, which worked for a little while, so the conversation kept going. And then by high school graduation, she wouldn't come to my high school graduation because she was uncomfortable that my father would judge her. And I was like, understood. Okay. And then that was that. But at 25, this is crazy, I spoke to her again because she was claiming she had Huntington's disease, which, you know, is a neuro disorder that my uncle had. And she claimed she had it and that I had it. And I needed to get tested. So that's how she got. And my poor father, you know, I don't give him a lot of credit. He's like a really rough tumble kind of guy. But again, no one knew. I didn't tell anyone for years. No one knew, even because my stepmom and my dad, I moved in and they didn't know what was wrong with me. They're like, what is wrong with this kid? Because I had emotional issues.
Right.
Big ones. And when I moved in, because no one could even understand, like, what happened or why I was the way I was. And
they
knew nothing. I told no one anything. No way. I was terrified. Mm. I was terrified. And then finally, my stepmom and I, who is my mom now, like, we are so tight. We had a breakthrough. And then it just came out, and I just was a puddle. And she was too. You know, I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot to go through, and it's a lot to hold in. You know, so that's why, you know, a lot of the charity work I do and everything, it's like, it's so deep-rooted, and I keep it real light on the surface because I can't.
Yeah.
I can't go there.
Yeah.
Because I've closed that door. And, you know, once you close an emotional door like that, you really, it's close the damn door.
Mm-hmm.
Because it will make you wallow for life and cause so many more dramas and so many more issues. And so, you know, but that's, I wouldn't be who I am now at all without it. Never.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have the drive. I wouldn't be willing. I literally just gave up my apartment for 6 months. I have no apartment right now. I'm like kind of bouncing because I wanted to go and build my career. And I've been in Europe and doing everything to keep building.
Yeah.
It has been my driving force of my life, everything that I went through.
That's always really interesting to me to hear what you're talking about right now. If you grew up with a rough situation, it seems like you can go one of two ways.
Yes.
Like you can kind of continue down that path, yes, just sort of what you know, or you can like totally be reverse and sort of be super ambitious to sort of like reach for success.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you're obviously the latter.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
And thank the universe you had your stepmom, like someone to talk
to.
Oh
my gosh. I mean, my grandmother, my father's mother, and her saved my life. They really did. And they were just kind. It's, again, kind.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Which is why I constantly have to remind myself to be kind. Because I could turn. It's easy, but it's work. Everything's work in our lives. You know that. I mean, nothing comes easy and nothing comes free.
Definitely.
It's work. And so I just constantly have to work on it. Mm-hmm. You know, the Uber over here, the lady. Oh, I was like, oh, this lady is going to get it. And then it was like... Be kind. She doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, it's like when you live a past fight. And I was like, okay, honey, we're late. Girl, step on it, dear. Let's go. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're listening to La Cucaracha in the car, and she is going just as slow.
I was like, girl, let's go.
You're killing me right now.
I know.
You know? Yeah, but it's like, be kind.
Yeah. When I get frustrated with strangers, I think of them as like, oh, what if this was my mom or my parent or my sister or my child?
We don't know what type of day.
Yeah.
We don't know their situation. We don't know what they're going through at the moment. And maybe they just need to take it a little slow. Mm-hmm. Maybe they need to be whatever they are. And, you know, we all, it's human emotion. We all go through it. And, you know, we can't forget that we all go through different things and we never know, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, this went into a different turn that I didn't expect this morning. I thought we were going to talk about diamonds and clothes.
I know nothing about either.
My favorite things.
Wait, so you get through high school.
Yes.
When do you suddenly get into, because I know you worked as a makeup artist.
I did.
First.
Yes.
What were your interests, like young Derek, teenage Derek, what were your hobbies? What was like things that you generally were into?
I, as an escape, had magazines.
Okay.
Magazines. Oh. I had magazines. It was Vogue and Bazaar and Elle and all these magazines. And I dreamed of being in them, seeing myself there, owning a magazine, doing magazine work. I've literally done magazine work for years, and now I own a magazine, and I'm about to launch a new one. And, you know, it has definitely taken me time, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. Everything that takes time is worth it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's another thing I'm constantly saying. It takes time. And I didn't hit young. I'll hit older, because I haven't hit yet.
I love that.
And I know I won't hit for another 10 plus years, I think. You know, it's
and
coming and it's growing.
When you say hit, you mean like really hit your stride in your career?
Yes.
Yes.
Whether, because I knew my entire life, because of how I grew up, that I'd be fabulously wealthy. Girl, I don't know how that's going to happen, but I'm working on it. I'll work on it and work on it.
Same, Derek.
Yeah, no, you know, but I've always known things about myself, because there's one thing I am is intuitive, and I know when I need to make a change. I know when I need to grow. I know this isn't going to work. I know it. Boom. Make a change. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, I still have friends from 20-something years ago. I'm really loyal, but, you know, I needed a baseline, and then because that allows you, once you have your base, things can move and things can, you know, you don't have to be so concrete about things because you always need your foundation. But once you have a foundation, you can grow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's really important.
I want to kind of wind a little bit through your career because you honestly have done, like, I feel like you are like scrappy. Like, in a good way.
In more ways than one, yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes, I am scrappy. No one fucks with me.
No, I like that.
Yeah. Because if you do, I will come for you.
Well, in the industry that you work
myself.
In, I feel like in fashion, the fashion industry in general, and like the beauty and fat, that whole area over there is very intimidating to me. So if someone
and,
was like,
and it should be.
Yeah. If someone was like, okay, you're going to, if someone was like held a gun to my head and they were like, you need to be a fashion stylist, I wouldn't make it. Like, I don't even know the first place to start.
No, yeah. Because so, it's tough, trust me.
So you're working as a makeup artist, and then I was reading about how you moved to Miami to start Atomic.
No. So basically, I worked as a makeup artist. Originally, I worked for a model agency.
Oh, okay.
And I was starting to do makeup there. And makeup was a necessity because being a stylist is the most thankless, horrible career ever. You have to love it. You have to have such passion or you'll never make it. Mm-hmm. Because it is such a passionate thing. You're not there for the money, especially now because there is none. And everyone wants it. Yeah. You know.
Everyone wants to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And also everyone wants it free, you know, because everyone thinks they're a genius. So that's why, which I get.
Right.
But I started doing makeup out of necessity because I couldn't afford to be a stylist. And then that brought me a lot, though. You know, I mean, it took me to Miami, and I had a very good job. And I could have, and I mean, I was making six figures at 22 years old. I was doing really well.
Oh, you went to Miami at 22?
I was 23, I think. I was in New York. I went to FIT. I did tons of internships.
The Fashion Institute of Technology, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. Or fags in training, depending on how you think. You know what I mean? Oh, no, that's what everyone called it when I went there. No, whatever. And most of the school, it's so much graphic design that no one's gay. It's hilarious.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just the design kids, and we're all wild. Yeah. And, you know, that was Richie Rich days and the club kids, and I went out every night and did that.
Yeah.
But I went to work every day full time, and I had three internships. I just keep it busy.
Right.
Just keep it busy.
So you're into these magazines as an escape as a kid, but you get into fashion. Like, that's like sort of
no other choice. I didn't know what else. Funny enough, the only other thing that I would have done, which this is, nobody knows this about me, I taught middle school math to kids with Down syndrome all through high school because they were the only ones that were kind to me. And that's why, because I was so horribly bullied and teased. And so that was an escape, too.
And so you're good at math.
It was either, honey, I know how to get 20% off. That's how good at math I am. And how to get the check written
to me. Well, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, exactly. I can get a discount in a second. So that was something that I was into. And I think that also, that was very healing for me.
Yeah.
And I was a Special Olympics coach and did all those things and can't do one sport, but I was there supporting. I was there with love. But then, you know, it was always known I'd go into magazines. Mm-hmm. It was always known because I spent my money at my grocery store. Like, I had a little grocery store job and I spent all my money on magazines.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, there were piles and piles and piles in our basement because I just pored over things. But that was also my research, which has helped me. Because I have so much reference where these kids have no reference anymore. They think Beyonce invented it. And I was like, oh, dear. She doesn't even know what that is. Somebody on the team stole that from the 60s. Like, it's a random Liza thing. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the world we live in now, you know, which makes me laugh. But I had just done so much research, and then I wanted to be an artist. And I was like, I could make a lot of money. Or I could be an artist and grow into the money. And I chose the art. That was really important to me. And so I went to Miami, and I still have some of those. That felt like my real college years when I was in Miami, because I still have the same best friends now for 20-something years. And everyone started there. Everyone.
And what specifically were you doing when you went to Miami work-wise?
Makeup. Okay. I got my first TV gig on Road Rules.
Oh.
And they threw me on the show because I just cracked jokes all day and I was doing makeup and we just had a blast.
Uh-huh.
And then I hosted a show called Big Boutique, which was on the Old Style Network. And so I would get a lot of one-offs. That's been my life. I get a one-off. You know, I have the Joan Rivers career of fashion. It's like I'm out there, everyone knows me, but never the big hit, never the big hit. But I do everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I hosted another show called Fashion Avenue with an old supermodel named Jody Kidd. Her sister's a huge Gemma Kidd. Do you know her, the makeup artist? And she has a makeup line too.
I think she may have been on our show.
Oh, before. Probably. Yeah, she's amazing. Such a talent. She's so cool. And her sister's divine. But she was like heroin chic, one of those girls. She weighed 100 pounds. She's 6'1". One of those.
The kids.
Yeah. So she, so I did a little show with her, and that just started the hustle.
Okay.
You know, and no one knew me. And then, but I started getting editor jobs. So I had Atomic. I met this amazing woman in Miami.
And Atomic was a styling agency.
It was. And they, before I got there, which I ended up owning it with the woman that started, her name is Teddy Gunter, another talent. And she had The Rock and their entire family.
Oh.
And helped transition him into Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
Yeah. Yeah, they're from Miami.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he went to Miami University or whatever. And the wife is the genius. She's amazing. Her name is Danny Garcia. She's the one producing all the movies now, and they're not even married anymore. He has a new girl, a baby, the whole thing.
Oh, really?
And they're all business partners because she is a genius. I admire her so much. She did his homework to get him out of Miami University to make sure he, whatever, got him into the wrestling thing, was with him all through that. And she was an investment banker. He never had to work a day in his life before Scorpion King. Before wow. Scorpion King. So they are rich.
What a gal.
Rich. Quiet. They're very quiet about it.
So I know nothing about this. So you're saying that basically The Rock and his family went to Atomic and they were like, listen, we don't know how to dress. Help us.
Well, you know the turtleneck with the necklace
and
the whatever?
Yeah.
That's how he came. This was before me, though.
Okay.
And then I worked with them a lot. Just more, at the time, I was more office-y because I needed to know how to run a business.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. And so I worked with them. And then the styling literally came because we also had a rental. So, you know, in Miami at the time, everyone was down there. It was just after Versace, so it hadn't died yet, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so hot. And then when he was murdered, tragically, it dwindled from there because people were afraid. You know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, September 11th happened. That's how I ended up there because I got off the plane on September 7th and I was like, uh-oh, I'm not going anywhere. That's how I ended up in Miami, really, in the end. Mm. And I met this woman, Teddy. She had The Rock going on. And then we had a rental and then I ended up styling everyone's rental. So they'd come in for jobs, styling jobs, and I could, because we made more money that way, and I did the entire job for them, so they gave us their budgets. But what ended up happening is that the stylists would come, they wouldn't even need to do it anymore. I did their entire job for them.
So you're essentially like learning how to be a stylist. You're essentially like getting those skills on the job.
That's exactly what happened. And then one day a girl came and she's like, you've done every job for me and I'm so grateful to you. I want to give you a music video. And so, but that was huge.
Yeah.
In Miami.
Oh, no, for sure.
Honey, in the early 2000s, girl, it was popping and locking every minute.
Destiny's Child.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I got a music video and it was, you remember Steps from the UK? That was another huge, that was right before Spice Girls. They were huge. So H and Claire, they were the two big ones from the group. I styled their music video. That gave me a music video styling career because the director directed all that stuff. And so every time he came, boom.
Yeah.
So I did every pop idol, every whatever, which turned into Trina and Ludacris and Be All Right and, you know, Jackie O, like that whole Southern hip hop, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I started working for The Source, that hip hop magazine. Hilarious, if anyone knew me. It's like
The Source,
opposite.
That's
the
still
opposite
around.
Of anything I am. But so funny, but that was my career because that was a Miami career.
Yeah.
And then that turned into That turned into me being an editor for like a local Tampa magazine, which turned me into an editor for all the magazines in Southern Florida, which had money at the time. So I was
You're into it.
Oh, it was amazing.
So when you said, and then she offered me a music video, when you said that, I thought in my mind about how someone was like asked you to be on Broadway, like to be in the
music video. Oh, no. That's so funny.
That makes more sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I see how that could transpire.
Yeah,
you
it was all
one person.
Da, da, da.
And then, yeah,
because I was doing makeup still at the time, and then it just transitioned one day, and then it was like, oh, it doesn't make sense anymore. And now I'm making real money.
Yeah.
You know, because if you do a fashion editorial, magazines don't pay anything because there's no money. And to print, to distribute, the shipping alone is tens of thousands of dollars. And for someone like Vogue, they're probably $100,000 in shipping. I mean, it's just endless, the money. So, you know, there was no real money. But at the time, it was hot real estate market, whatever. So I would get budgets. That's how I really got into the industry because I could hire everyone from New York and fly them in.
Okay.
That's how I got in.
Bringing in the big dogs.
And my entire life has never been someone giving me something that I didn't manipulate. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. That's why I have a magazine now. Because they can't fire me.
Yeah.
I'm
smart.
Like, what am I firing myself?
It's smart.
That's why, everything. That's why, like, everyone's like, why don't you have a show? I'm like, because I'll get fired. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When I moved here, like Hollywood Today Live, they wanted to do a whole thing. Boom, just ghosted. Now it's Ross Matthews. I go, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was like, that's okay. I'll start my own production company and I'll get my own show and I'll get my own show on and I'll do the Wendy Williams / Joan Rivers thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whatever.
I mean, and you don't even need traditional television anymore anyways.
God, no.
Like,
no.
It's not even...
No, and the only reason why I'm not doing it now is because there's only 24 hours a day.
Mm.
If there were 48, I'd be on, honey. It'd be done. You know?
I want to talk about your personal style. So... Mid-20s in Florida, like, what was your style like? What was your...
Conservative. And they could... Because they... I was hitting every wall. It was that transition time and no one got it. And so I was like, okay. So, but it turned me into the style I have now.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm such a mix of traditional and then more avant-garde. And so... Or like high fashion, whatever you want to call it. And so... Because when I moved there... I had long hair. It was a whole thing. And I was wearing, like, stilettos every day.
Really?
They,
okay,
they
yeah, that's what I'm curious
it.
About.
Oh, no. Oh, when I lived in Milan for 6 months, and I have a lot of the same friends. I was, like, Chanel bags and stilettos every day. We'd go out. My hair would be in, like, pompadours every night. It was, like, hilarious.
Yeah.
But, and I was fat, too. And, it's a story. I was like, whoa, get it, girl.
I mean,
I look
Italy.
Back now, I'm like... You know what?
It's not hard
to. How far
to,
we have come.
It's not
dear.
Hard to
How
gain the LBs in Italy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, everyone thought I was a celeb because no one walked around like that at the time.
So you were standing
at
out.
All. Oh, and I went, every night I was out. No one, never paid for anything. They were like, come on in.
Yeah.
Every VIP, every single thing, like it was like, come on in. Because it was, Milan was so conservative back then. And then here I come rolling in. And then drunk half the time, rolling around on the floor. And they were like, living. So it was fun. You know, it's the entertainment.
Fashion to me is like one of those avenues that you can take to like try and figure out who you are and express yourself as like.
Absolutely.
You know, like let's say you aren't entirely sure of your personal identity.
Yeah.
It can really come out through fashion, obviously.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's just being brave enough to put it on.
Yeah. And I imagine that probably that was something that.
Oh, it sure was. I mean, because like I was. That was before 25, before I really forgave my mother everything that was kind of going on. And I needed to grow and I needed to express myself in some way. And besides like bubbling over and like, you know, going crazy. And again, the mental hospital. And, you know, I've also never done a drug in my life. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, whatever. It's just like cocktails. So I didn't have an escape like that. I had to deal.
Yeah.
You know, where because I know drugs are an escape and I totally get why and I get why people would do them.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go another route because I didn't want to be that person. And there was a lot of stuff in my family that was going on. Like my cousin was murdered by his dealer. Another one dropped out of a heart attack. And I was like, oh, no. So I went another way, you know, and I was super, super, super high strung.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I see people now from that time and they're like, God, you're so calm. I'm like, really? But I guess so. And I'm older now.
You zen
and,
you out
know,
over
yeah,
years.
A little. Well, I wouldn't go that far, but you know, yeah. Zuh. Yeah. I zuh.
You zed.
I zuh. The N isn't here yet, but the zuh is. You know, so I just, I have my own process. You know, when I go through times, and like that was a very conservative time for me. It's so funny because I look older then than I do now.
Isn't it funny? I feel like that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, I was definitely the older, the better, because I was a big old wreck. Mm-hmm. And then I've kind of grown, and you know, I'm living my 20-year-old dreams now. You know, I'm in Paris doing street style, getting covered in Vogue. It was like, when did I ever, at this age, think that that would go down?
Yeah, did you have that thought? Like, think about 15-year-old me and where I am right here now.
I thank God like, every day. Yes, of course. Are you kidding? Trust me. Every time I take a first-class flight, I'm crying inside. It's amazing. You know what I mean? And just, like, every time I get photographed or every time I'm at a shoot, that's me. And, you know, like, I have a very good cover coming out, like, really soon. And I fought for it, girl, because no one's given me anything. And so I fought for it. And, but I cry inside because for that child.
Yeah.
You know what?
In, of course.
In joy. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, I mean, it's funny, you know, like in the past, not anymore, but like in the old days, they used to call me fame whore and all this stuff. And I was like, no, honey, I got to get out there because you'll see what I do with it. There's a plan.
Yeah.
There's a plan, you know, and I was a fame whore, but it got me here.
Yeah.
Because I had to be, because again, no one has ever given me anything. Ever. I had to fight. I was never that door. You know, I have so many friends that are superstars now that I started out with, you know, Zach Posen and those kind of guys, and superstars. And then I see them along the way and they're like, how did you get in? Or how did you do this? And I was like, the same way, but they always respect me and they always have. And he specifically tried to help me in the beginning. He was like, I get it, you know? And so that's why the success is sweeter, because it wasn't easy. And I've had to do everything on my own. That's why I have this damn magazine. This is like a headache. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's my soul. But it's a headache.
I want to talk about La Palme, but really quickly before I forget. So you went to a bunch of fashion weeks in the past.
Oh, girl. Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So for like a simple Susie like me, haven't been
simple
to one.
Simple Susie. That's very good. I like that. Well, you're wearing a bolero tie, dear. Not that simple.
I know. Julie Chang, our entertainment reporter here, who's also very fashionable.
Uh-huh.
The first time I wore this, she was like, oh, I love that bolero, whatever it's called, tie. Bolero. I didn't even know what it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so ever since then, I was like, I don't know if I should wear this. And ever since she said that, I've worn it.
Oh, good. See? A little confidence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. What is that experience like, though? Like, do you get invited to all of these? Do you sort of say, like, are you styling for other people there? Are you going to like just do some research for yourself? Like what is,
well, now,
can you talk about that?
No. So now, a lot of the things I go to, like in New York, especially are friends.
Yeah.
Some people want me there. Some people invite me for the magazine. It's just different
it's
reasons.
A mix.
It's definitely a mix. You know, it's like, God, how many shows did we go to in New York? 15, 18. That was a lot. Paris, I didn't go to that many because it was so last second.
Yeah.
But then I get invited. So, for instance, I did this really cool one in Romania that changed my life. It's so funny. Europe has changed my life in the last 2 years. It's been phenomenal, everything that's happened. And so I literally, he was like, whoever's listening, my friend and publicist is sitting next to me, and we've been friends 10 years, so I keep referring to him. There you go. Updated. he's like, have you lost your mind? You're going to be murdered. You're in the middle of Romania.
Going to Romania.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And because it's such a mystery, no one really knows about it. And it's actually beautiful. People are very kind. They actually just passed gay marriage. It's phenomenal.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that is a very religious country. No one showed up to vote against it. That's why.
Wow.
It was just low Lavona turnout. Oh, I was like, that's the best reason, actually, because no one cares.
Yeah.
That's why.
Just apathy.
They're like, honey, I'm just trying to make a buck. Their average income there is €300 a month, by the way. So they're just trying to make a dollar, girl, selling something on the side of the
road.
They
got bigger
problems. Girl. Absolutely. So, and they don't think anyone's gay anyways. So they're like, what gays?
Yeah.
So But I went there, and it was so phenomenal. People come from around the world. When I tell you, you land in Bucharest, which is the capital of Romania, and you drive 5 hours to a little town. The town pays for the Fashion Week, this genius guy, because he's such a hustler and lives the same kind of way I do. His name is Matiki.
He's the Romanian Derek.
Yes, basically, straight. Screwing every girl in town.
Love
smart,
it.
Smart, okay. Smart guy. And he started this thing 10 years ago, and he's got American Vogue schleppin'.
Wow.
Italian Vogue. Everyone comes. Everyone comes. People come from Hong Kong, Lima. Honey, that's a trip.
From Peru? From
yes.
Wow.
Yeah, people come from around the world. Paris, London, Milan, whatever. I came from here. And it's a week of celebrating artists. It's amazing. So for that, we go to everything. And we're trucked around. It's a schlep, let me tell you. Because these fashion weeks look fun. Until they keep you out until 3 o'clock in the morning and the first show's at 9 and you had best show up. Because Spain was like that. I was in Madrid and they fly you over, so they want their money's worth. You best sit at everything.
Gotcha.
I was like, oh my God, I'm going to kill myself.
So it's all day long?
Into the night.
Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's funny because there's a small group of us that do all the international ones. Another one, this genius woman, her name is Diane Pernet. And she's this Parisian legend. She has the Paris Fashion Film Festival, which is actually going on, starts today.
Cool.
Little shout out to her.
Yeah.
And Rosie De Palma is the president, along with Jean-Paul Gaultier, who everyone knows. Yeah, amazing. And so she, this poor thing, older, she has a pompadour, huge, black hair. She's like Elvira. With the things, right?
Right.
They schlep her around the world, honey. They just sent her to Vancouver from Paris. And she's like, kill me now. We start at 9 in the morning. Oh, see, there's a picture of her. Divine, right? Oh,
wait,
she's fabulous.
This is her?
Oh, yeah. We were in Romania together, too.
So if anyone cares to look on Twitter, it's at ASVOF is her Twitter
handle. Yeah, ASVOF. ASVOF. Hit her up. It's fabulous.
Oh, she's got like spiders in her hair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and they're all like black diamonds and sterling. Oh, she's no joke. No, she is like the real deal.
What a dark goddess.
Oh, she's fabulous. And if you only knew, she's from D.C.
She's from D.C.?
Oh, yes. That's why I really love her. I was like, bitch, sit down. Good God. She's from D.C., but she's lived in Paris 25 years. She is a fixture in Paris, but she's so individual. She's so interesting. And so this one, she schlep in the world, too. And we were in Romania together. That's how we met. I had been hearing a lot about her just through other friends. And then I was like, and then her and I were the only ones in the good hotel. I was like, oh, they put the old ladies in the good hotel. And then I had a separate driver because all I do is complain.
What were the takeaways for you other than like it kind of probably helps sort of rejuvenate your feelings for the industry and stuff, just being in a situation like that.
Oh, doing these fashion weeks?
Yeah.
Business. Yeah.
In what ways?
I have a luxury consulting business. So I help designers. I help beauty companies get to the next level.
Gotcha.
I know everyone. You need a fashion show? You'll have it in a
week.
Here
we go.
Yeah. Like, what do you need? What do you want to do? You want a campaign? Done. What do you need?
Yeah.
You know, because of the magazine, too. It expands me so much. I know so many photographers, and I've worked for 20 years in this industry. And it's like, do you want a show in Paris? Got it. You want this in London? Got it. You want to do a show in Timbuktu? Okay. You want to shoot here? You want to do this? You want to do that? I'm so resourceful. You want to throw a party? Where? When? Tell me who. Done.
I want to throw a party.
Done. Done.
I do.
Give me a budget. Parties. I'm here for you, girl. where's the check? I'm available. And I'll fill the room, too, with gorgeous people.
Oh.
But that's what, you know,
gorgeous
but that's what I've kind of been able to do, you know, because the magazine has been a tool. This is a tool.
What was sort of, walk me through, like, because I know that you were working as an editor for other publications in Florida, you said.
Yeah.
What was sort of the process of starting this? Because I feel like this would be hard.
I didn't start it. What happened was it was a very small magazine in Florida owned by a guy that you would think was a truck driver. You would never know.
I like
it. Not fashion-y
at all.
Good, good, sold, good man.
Okay.
And so an old business manager of mine called, and he's like, there's an opportunity. I know I can get you a cover. but they're going to want you to work on it a little bit, like do a story or two.
Yeah.
And so I just had my assistants do it. It was fine. And then I did the cover. I was in London at the time. He shipped it over to London. I hawked it out because I was presenting International Designer of the Year in London at the Carinthia, which is another part of this story, actually. And so, which is a fabulous hotel. And so I hawked it out. I mean, people were holding it in front of them, stars. And then I came back to New York and I organized my own with a publicist at the time, autograph signing.
Oh.
Because I know people that had a fashion week thing going on. It was a big lounge. And they were like, oh, come and do it. It'd be fabulous. And I was like, done. So organized it with him. And he had already started talking to me because he was like, because I was on television doing all these new shows, all these things like hawking out brands. You know, I'll do a style segment, get paid for it, whatever. And I was doing a lot of it and doing really well with it because broadcast, you know, is a huge, that's a lot of people in front of you. That's how I've been traveling around the country too. And so we went and I did this autograph signing and it was phenomenal, huge. And that's how I met all of this thing in Romania. All of Europe happened from that one day. That day changed my life forever because a company was there that does marketing for luxury hotels. And they were like, can we bring you to Malta? And I was like, yep.
Yes, you can.
Sure. And then, but I didn't own the magazine yet. I was just on the cover. And then over the months, it was like, oh, let's start a TV production company. And I said, you know, I'm too new in Hollywood. No one really knows me. I'd rather have distribution. And I'd rather be on people's tabletops than shutting me off or turning the channel. That's more important to me now because that's the base.
Well, and you always were into magazines, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And I love magazines. So we started this together. It was already going, but then, I mean, there was no celebrity. Okay. I came in and we just basically threw the old
one
away.
Was it called
away.
La Palme?
It was called La Palme. It's my business partner's last name.
Oh, okay.
So I came in and I was like, this is how we're going to do it. We're doing it double-sided. We're going to get celebrities on each side because we're quarterly and that gives us 8 celebrities a year to play with. Okay. And as opposed to 4.
Right.
And I was like, let's, you know, how can we get the most? I'm all about bang for buck. What am I getting? Like, how much can I get out of it? And I was like, it's the same work. Who cares? So then I called everyone I knew and I was like, we're making a magazine, help. And they all did. And it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then thank God for friend to the right.
Yeah.
And he was able to come in and turn it into a publicity machine.
Wow.
And so that changed my career overnight in LA. No one knew who, I mean, nobody. I would sit in a room and they'd be like, you're a star in New York, but no one knows who you are here. So no one cares. Those exact words.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they will, don't worry. And now it's the same publicist that call me to get people in. Mm-hmm. It's a joke, but that's my entire life. You know,
my entire life,
I could say fuck you every single day at this point, because it's a joke, because it's all the same people that were like, no, who are you? No, you're nobody. No, you're this. No, you're this. You're da, da, da. And I was like, okay, we'll see. Yeah.
Isn't that such a weird way to like exist
no,
and work?
No, it's a fact. Let me tell you. It gives me so much personal power.
Yeah.
You know, whether I power out in the world or not, doesn't matter. It's who I am at home and who I know I am. And I was like, I told you.
Yeah.
But that gives me the drive.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like self-awareness and personal satisfaction is the only way that you can like exist in that world where people are like, you know, who are you?
But that's why so many people in Hollywood, so many people in the fashion beauty industry or whatever have such low self-esteem because they don't have that. They got lucky to meet someone, they gave them a break, and then it moved them forward. However they got the break is no one's business. That's how they got there.
Right.
And so, you know, then they keep going and then they get a big team around them and whatever. But inside, they're still, you know, and I think that happens a lot with actresses and actors because they have to totally become different people all the time. And that's what they get paid to do.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to have such a strong sense of self when your entire life is based on being someone else. Makes totally. Perfect sense, right?
I feel like I've talked about this on here before, too. Like, if you have a low self-esteem to begin with, and you're saying, and you're auditioning, and you're going through that process
of
pick me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the
and
best.
And then, of course, everyone telling you you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And then you get one time. Could you imagine how many things you have to go through to get one?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there are people that never get picked.
Yeah.
Never. But the drive to keep going, the drive to keep going. You know, it's interesting. It's such an interesting business.
What's the biggest challenge in owning a magazine? Because I feel like
paying.
It's very...
Money.
Because I feel like it has to be almost like half of the magazine is obviously the physical.
Yeah.
Of what's in front of you right now.
Yes, of course.
But then the other half is like your digital presence. Like the website is like very chic and like
Thank you. It's a challenge.
And like it's updating content. And then of course you have to have like in 2018 you have to have a social media presence and have like kind of a plan for that. But it seems like it would be even hard to just like fill a whole magazine all the time.
It is.
I guess since it's quarterly.
Again, I think number one, I have now fabulous celebrity relationships.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at Leah. She's killing it.
Oh,
Leah Remini is like...
Killing it. No, first of all, and you know what? Oh, I have such a great story about Leah Remini. It's so good. I love it. So I was dying to meet her because I think she's such a badass, right? And I was like, oh, and the whole like F you to Scientology, which Scientology, I like you. Please stop sending me prank calls. Please. Thank you.
Wait, really?
Oh, girl.
Like people call yourself
girl, girl. We're moving on. Please stop prank calling me.
What?
Thank you. I
we have
appreciate
a big Scientology audience. So.
I appreciate who you are. Please stop pranking. I get enough bill collectors. Thank you. So, you know, I think like with her, I was like, oh, honey, she is something. And the whole J-Lo thing, I love J-Lo and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so her team, this is something no one knows about her. She has the same team for 25 years. Same makeup artist, 25 years.
That's
Talk
great.
About loyal.
Yeah, that's great.
Right? And I think loyalty and making it in this business is everything, too. Everything. I call her makeup artist. I was like, hey, I just want to talk about this is what we're going to do. And she was like, oh, honey, she don't do that. And I was like, oh. And she's like, oh, no.
What was your idea?
What we did.
Oh, okay. You just had to explain it a different way.
Yeah. No. So, and she goes, I'm telling you, she does her. That's it. I try. You know, when you're a beauty professional and you're working with someone that long, it's like, bitch, can we change the lipstick? Can we do something? You know what I mean? But it's like, this is her face. She's like, this is the brand. This is what I do. And and everyone that kind of walks in the door with me, like Carmen Electra, I turned her into something like more. I wanted Carmen Electra to be like a Liz Taylor and turned her more into a Liz Taylor, which she literally was telling everyone and, you know, at a fashion show 2 weeks ago. It was like fabulous. Bajli Mishka, everybody, like Alec Baldwin, everyone, how I had turned her into this like goddess and how beautiful. It was amazing. I was like, oh, my God, bitch, I love you.
It's great
Thank
for you.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah.
It opens doors.
Yeah.
You know, and so with her, they knew what they were getting with me because that's just how I am. And publicists and I, we have good relationships, but I'm like, you're not telling me. No, dear. You're my guest. This is how it is. This is what I want to do. But I work with them because I'm not a bully. But I'm just like, I want to turn you into this because it will get the best reaction. Because if I'm doing you, why are you here?
Yeah.
Right?
When you're the creative director, you obviously have like
I always have a vision and I was like, you know, when we do mood boards, my entire life is making mood boards. And I was like, this is what I want to do. So I was like, I want the hair back. I want a darker lip. But she doesn't do any of that. Like, we're going to do cargo pants with stones and lots of cleavage and da, 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 da. And she walked in and we just looked at each other. And I was like, hi. And she was like, hand on my face. First of all, if you put your hand on my face, I'm in. Like, I'm mesmerized because that shows affection, like real affection. And she put her hand on my face and she's like, hello. And that was that. And we had the most amazing day singing and dancing and hanging out. And it was just so much fun. The same thing happened when I worked with Beyonce. Same thing. It was like, done. Okay. And it was amazing. amazing, yeah. You know?
Oh, right. So you worked in Miami, right? You worked with like Beyonce, Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba I did in LA, but I was living in New York at the time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because those old magazines. But Beyonce is such a funny story because her regular stylist then was Ty Hunter. Everybody knows Ty. He's a doll. I love him. That was the first time I met him. But I had girlfriends that were very tight with that crew, especially Beyonce. And so, you know, I like to walk in the door with somebody in common because it's an icebreaker. And also, you have to protect yourself in this industry because everyone wants something. And I was like, oh, you're friends with my girlfriend, but literally a girlfriend of mine lived in the house with them. Oh. Lived in the house because she wrote a book, Beyonce, the mother, everyone. And I love Tina. Oh, Tina is everything.
Miss Tina.
Yes, Miss Tina. Yes, Miss Tina Lawson now, girl. Miss Lawson. And I see the crazy father all the time still because he lives in Houston. I'm always in Houston. And so, like, this is a classic example of how I get in a door. We'll let you do it for free. You have to pay all your own expenses, but you're working with Beyonce. And I built the set, but we'll let you bring jewelry because it was their line anyway. So there's nothing to style. It's like they put on their House of Darion shitty look and go. You know what I mean? And so that's what I did. But that, again, is how my career has worked. I get in, I do it, but it was never just off. Like, it was never like, oh, we'll pay you to do this. And when I tell you I worked 2 weeks and the living room looked like her grandmother's living room on the bayou, literally, her mother was like, Tina was in tears. She was like, I can't believe. Like, I mean, I was.
Wait, what do you mean? What year are we talking about?
I created. Like, oh, God. So it was my first big job.
So she lived with
Tina's mother. Uh-huh. It was her grandmother.
Yes.
So they're from the South.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so she had a house like on the Mississippi and I recreated the living room.
Oh, I thought you meant literally.
That Tina grew up in. Okay. No, it was a set in New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Beyonce was like, oh my God.
Aww.
And it was so much fun. Like, I was literally like antiquing the walls with brown shoe polish.
Aww.
To make it look real, like it was really going on. And I think, like, that was so, we had such a good time. And Beyonce is very quiet in person because she saves it all. That's a lot of energy. If she was like this all the time, you can't go out there and, like, turn it on. Like, it's like a, you know, an up and down thing, which is any great performer is a quiet person.
Yeah.
Or at least more reserved until it's time. You know, I mean, we were with Moby the other night and, like, doesn't say a word. And then, boom, he's out there and he's like, hey, guys. You know what I mean? Like, he's there working.
Yeah.
You know, because it's work. It's your work, you know?
Right.
And so, like, we worked together and, you know, I was lucky enough to get to do the jewelry. But I just saw Ty in New York and he was like, girl, you've come a long way from those days. And I was like, yeah, no, it's amazing. No, because I want Ty to come work for us now, you know, and like do magazine stuff and have a new magazine launching. That's what's amazing about what I'm doing now, because I can offer everyone that gave me a chance, because now I can write about them. You know, we're in Barnes & Noble all over America.
Yeah.
We get so much press, like amazing. You know, our team is incredible, not because he's sitting across from us right now, but he's done such a phenomenal job. That, and he has been so integral for, I don't know if that's a word, building this magazine out and my own career, you know, because you need to be out there. This is the thing, you know? And in the very beginning of this, which is so funny, a lot of people were giving me like, oh, the only reason why you're popular is because you get so much press. But now we've caught up and now it's a good book. It's beautiful. It's well done. People really respect it. And we get a lot of press, you know, but you have to start somewhere and get it out there.
Totally.
But we've only done it. We haven't even hit the 3-year mark yet. January will be 3 years.
Okay.
January will be 3 years.
Well, I feel like as long as, A, you've always been interested in magazines, like this seems to sort of almost go back to your roots a little bit. And you are into being an artist in general.
Yes, for sure.
And being proud of a product that you're making and getting to like use your friendships and connections to sort of build it and watch it grow. Like all of those things are something to be obviously be really proud of. And whatever attention it gets, like, that's probably an added benefit, I would think. Like, just in getting
phenomenal.
To
it's
make
phenomenal.
This and
well, I have a new project starting called Mr. Warburton.
Yeah, so you have a jewelry line and a new magazine,
yes,
right?
Wearing the diamonds as we speak.
Oh my!
I know.
God. Look at my like little stupid little things.
They're not stupid.
Well, this one's good because it's
yes,
a wedding.
Yes, that's very good. Exactly. So you have diamonds on too.
This is, you know, the brand Pura Vida.
Uh huh.
This is Pura Vida.
So sweet.
Online.
It's so cute, but that works on you.
Made in Costa Rica.
Love it.
I think.
Love it. That's all right.
But anyways, I was looking at your magazine, your Mr. the new magazine.
Oh, got it, which hasn't launched yet.
I was looking at the Instagram. It's very spicy, and
yes,
I like it.
Yes, but that's why I wanted to do
but
it.
But it seems, like, different
but
than this.
Yeah, well, I can't start a new brand and make the same brand again.
Yeah, of course.
No, I wanted it spicy because I used to do so much work. Like my stuff with Jessica Alba and things like that are more avant-garde because I used to do a magazine in Hong Kong that was all art, and I got fired because of Jessica Alba because they thought it was too commercial.
Wow.
Isn't that fabulous?
They wanted it like more editorial.
They wanted it spicy. So this is a good spicy story for you, and it's celeb driven, so you'll like it. So remember when Kim got divorced, Kim Kardashian got divorced from Chris Humphries? Mm-hmm. So I had this idea. My boyfriend at the time was one of his managers, and they were fighting this whole thing that he was a homophobe and da-da-da. So I was running around New York with him and, you know, getting seen with him a lot, even though we were buddies behind the scenes, but they made sure. They made sure we were seen together, just like chilling and like, you know, I watched the Super Bowl, which I would never do, but I was fine. And he's such a nice guy. And now he's just quiet and richer than God.
Chris.
Yes. Okay. Businesses. He just did quiet businesses. Real estate, you know, stuff like that. No,
that
smart.
That to me is
smart.
The way to go. But
honey,
I digress.
Amen. Amen. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I know.
Just the quiet wealth.
So what we did with the magazine that started this whole like, oh, I know what I can do with magazines in this direction is so when I was like, let's do a shoot, let's throw him in his underwear and let's have him have machine guns fighting against the family.
Oh yes.
And so we did this spread when it was worldwide.
He was into it?
Oh, he'll do anything. He doesn't care.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's the easiest guy. Like he doesn't care. And you know what? This is the thing that really, looking back on all of it now, in defense to him, Kim's much older than him. And no one really thought about that. And he's from the middle of nowhere. He's from, like, Minnesota. And he was 23 years old, by the way. No one remembers that.
When they got married?
She was 30. Yeah, there it is.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
he's really showing it all.
Though. Oh, yeah. No, well, hey, listen. You know, she was into him for a reason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he was such a young guy. I think he was like 23, 24 when all that hit. You know, and then the show, and he just got swooped up, and his family knew nothing. They were not media people. They're from Minnesota, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they didn't even know who the Kardashians were.
Yeah.
And he was a ball player, and he had just come back from Europe playing ball, and, you know, he was just like a dude. Mm-hmm. And then all of that happened. So, you know, he got blamed for so much of it, but that was their spin, you know, which was great. And I'm sure she was in love with him because he is a doll. Such a nice guy. Yeah. But
or she maybe didn't think. I mean, I don't really watch the Kardashians, so I don't know specifically what happened, but I don't know. I feel like maybe they got married too young or kind of jumped
into
something.
She was 30 already, and wasn't she's been married a couple times now. This is her third marriage to Kanye.
Oh, really?
She was married before when no one knew her. Before Ray J, before the porn tape, before everything. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh. Okay.
She's interesting. And you know what? And that was the thing. People forget she was a stylist. I literally was telling somebody about this last night. She was a stylist. She was Paris Hilton's stylist.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Yeah. She cleaned closets. And the girls, the two sisters, had a kids store called Dash.
Yes.
Kids. Kids store.
Yeah. The Simple Life was one of my favorite shows in high school because it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And she was in that. Okay. So I really want to talk about, before you guys get out of here, hold on, I wrote this down because I was like, I have to remember this. So I want to talk about Goodwill, but you were appointed by the city of Los Angeles as the style ambassador of LA. What does that mean?
Who knows? No.
Well, I mean, like,
no, I'm just being facetious. Listen, it's a huge honor. And I was appointed because of my work with the homeless in New York.
Oh, the bottomless closet.
Yes, which I've done for, I did it for 11 years.
Uh-huh.
I know I'm just here and life is a bit crazy, but we still do a lot of work for them. And raising money and definitely raising awareness.
So, important to catch people up, the charity in New York that you were working with, that is like getting women dressed to go to job interviews.
Helping them transition back into the workforce.
Gotcha.
You know, it's women that have been abused. It's women that are just impoverished for one reason or another. Some homeless, but it's not a shelter. You come there as a program. And so some women just are broke, you know, but it's amazing. I was there, I don't know, a few months ago, and it was amazing to see a woman tell me about how her daughter was in college now. And this is a woman that I had worked with 10 years ago, right? She was in college and then she was getting her PhD, meaning the woman, and then her daughter was also in college. And I was like, it's all worth it. It's amazing. And the success stories that have come through have been unbelievable. It's a miracle what you can do when you decide. When you decide to make your life better. And, you know, when I go there, so many of them know who I am now, but years ago, you know, they didn't. And they would walk in really intimidated because they thought I was going to be this fashion person and really snobby or whatever. And I was like, I was you. I was actually your child. And so I just break it down from the beginning. And I was like, I'm in a costume that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out a way to make you happy. And frankly, I want to thank you all for being here because you've decided to change your life. No one forces anyone to show up. Success is showing up.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, it's that, which really ties out this entire interview, actually, because you got to show up, and that's just what it is. And so these women show up, we help them, and they want to be helped. And that's the joy of it. And so the city of Los Angeles, somebody on city council was just like, this is amazing what you've done. Let's do some work here. And I've done a lot of work here. And that's how it happened.
So I was watching a video, actually, of you at the Union Rescue Mission.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
What do you do down there?
We have done a few different things. We've donated clothes. We do these things called artist brunches, where I invite people in our industry, people that support artists and whatnot, to come. And everyone pays for brunch. Money goes directly to the organization, and we all donate clothes. You know, I mean, I'm a fashion guy. Like, it makes sense for me.
Yeah.
And it's nothing. You know, people forget that what is an hour a week? What is an hour a month? What is, you know what I mean? And just, like, being able to support others is such a blessing because you never know. You know, everyone's always funny with me because we talk about, you know, I was like, I'm always nice to the doorman, the janitor, because, honey, you never know when they're your boss. You never know when the building's burning down and they're saving your life.
Totally.
You never know. So it's like you always treat people with kindness because you never know. And, you know, with someone like that, I was like, gosh, you know, I've worked with people that now have the power to do things to help others. And it's amazing, you know.
What's really striking to me when I moved to Los Angeles is obviously the homeless population here is...
Like, it's the homeless capital of America.
It's incredible.
No, it is.
Incredible.
It's the homeless capital of America. Yeah.
So, and it's interesting, like, as I have gotten older and obviously, like, have a rent to pay and try and get at least places and have an income and have bills and all of these things, it's very easy to become homeless. Like, very easy.
Well, that was my story.
Right?
Yeah, it was a slippery slope.
Because
we got thrown out of a place, then there was not enough money for first, last security, no family to call, boom, you're homeless.
And if you have a low income, you have to be amazing at managing money to survive.
Yes.
Like, as far as, like, if you live out of your car, you have to have car insurance or else, like, you'll get ticketed. Or, like, there's certain things that you really have to be good at managing the small amount of money that you do have.
Yeah.
And I can see where it would be a slippery slope.
It's a slippery slope.
Do you feel like there are any, are there some misconceptions that you think about that people have of homeless in America? Like, maybe that.
Yes. Yes. And here's why I get very angry about it. If I hear go get a job one more time, you have to have an address to get a job. You have to have a phone to get a phone call, to get a job interview. you have to have clothes to wear to the job. People
you have to be clean.
Yeah, thank you. And you know what? A lot of times what makes me angry about ignorant people talking like this, and it's not that they're ignorant people, it's they're ignorant about the situation. And they don't understand, so they just put it down, you know? And so they put down people that are begging on the street or whatnot. And you have to understand that there's a lot of factors go into just getting a job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so also, a lot of people that are homeless on the street have mental issues, maybe drug issues, and there are social issues that need to be addressed. And that's really difficult when there are not enough services. And this is a city with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of homeless, and there might be 60,000 situations. Not even. Like Union Rescue has 4,000 beds. I mean, out of hundreds of thousands of people. Or, you know.
Yeah.
Please don't quote me on the numbers, but they're in those windows.
Right.
And so it's just so sad. And, you know, like when I'm in New York, it's much more manageable in New York because the city is so much more involved. And that's because everyone walks on the street in New York. So there's a billionaire.
Are closer
there's,
to it.
There's physically. The mayor. They're physically on the street.
Yeah.
Everyone's in the subway. So there are programs. And, you know, there's so many great programs in New York. You know, like the Men in Blue, which is unbelievable. And they clean the streets every day. And that's a program that was started. And it's amazing. And they provide housing and everything. It's just unreal what they've been able to do in New York. Unfortunately, we live behind gated communities here, and everyone's in a car. Mm-hmm. So they're not really facing it. And they're like, oh, we've heard about it, but it doesn't mean they're living it. Where in New York, you really live it. And it's much different. It's much different.
Well, it's so incredible. The contrast in quality of life for people here is like you could see someone on the sidewalk with their child panhandling, and then a block later, you're in Beverly Hills.
Literally.
It's like if you stop and think about it for too long, it could like really, really make you
it's upsetting.
Down.
Yeah, no, of
down
course.
About life.
It is. Yeah, no, I mean, it's really upsetting, you know, and it's a real problem here. It's a real issue, and people are working on it, but not enough.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't talk about it enough because it makes people depressed. You know, it's all these things, you know. And so it's tough to deal with. It's tough to deal with.
Not to go down a rabbit hole, but I know that like the mayor, they recently opened some like temporary shelters in like a bunch of neighborhoods throughout Los Angeles.
Yes.
And they were because they're planning to build maybe like 12 or 15 new shelters. Like there's money being put toward it. But then
they need 40
people in those neighborhoods.
Of
don't
course,
want them there.
Of course.
So it's kind of a problem that isn't an easy fix, of course.
Yes, and that's why so many end up downtown.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, or in Santa Monica, mm-hmm. in the parks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that alone. I mean, it's, but you, in Santa Monica, a lot of them are vets. Mm. How sad is it that these people give their life for our country and then they're thrown out on the streets? Because they have issues. The Obamas really try to work on that. And Michelle Obama and what was our vice president's wife? She's fabulous. I love
Jill
her.
Biden.
Jill Biden. Thank you. Jill Biden started a program, and they have made strides for veterans here in America, which is unbelievable of what they've been able to do. And I really celebrate them for that. You know.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic, which I wish our current White House would do something like that now. No diss. It's not a diss. No.
He's having lunch with Kanye.
Oh. Well, at least he's busy. At least he's busy and we know where he is. He's not in the Situation Room. No.
True.
No, I don't want to bash.
His passcode is 000.
You know what? I don't want to bash our president because he is voted into office, and we need to encourage him to stay off Twitter and encourage him to do good work. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. Instead of bashing him every day, it's pointless.
Yeah,
because all
I would
he does,
agree.
All he does is react.
Yeah, if he does well, then we do well.
Exactly,
right?
And that's something really to concentrate on. Yeah.
Okay, before we go, because I really want to talk about. I saw that you went to Nicaragua and somewhere in Africa.
I'm so glad we could talk about that.
right? Somewhere in Africa?
I haven't been to Africa yet.
Oh, okay.
I was supposed to be there right now, actually.
Oh, okay.
It got postponed to the spring.
So you're the Goodwill ambassador. Goodwill's program is called Just a Drop, where they basically install some type of like water well system in various third world countries.
So what they do is so unbelievable. And funny enough, that came out of the autograph signing.
It all comes out of the autograph signing.
It sure does. It sure does. Honey, I'm going to start doing them on the side of the street. I was like, good things happen when I'm signing autographs. No, it's the same marketing group that has the high-end hotel chain. And the high-end hotel chain is called the Corinthia. And they're very kind to me. Actually, you can read all about my trip to Prague and the brand new issue of Le Palm magazine on newsstands now. And Corinthia is the largest donor to
Just a Drop.
And so that's how I got involved. And they approached me in London. And it's a British-based organization. And it's just unbelievable what they do, because it's not about going in, getting the water and leaving. What they do is they go in, educate, they create local governments to help the villages sustain. Mm. So a lot of the villages have no sanitation. They have no running water. The women, and I'll bring up the women part in a minute. Women are walking 5+ miles a day in sweltering heat, 100+, to get water with buckets on top of their heads. So I was lucky enough to be invited to go there to Nicaragua last year, and I literally did not know what to expect. And I got there.
Had you been to a third world country before?
Never. Okay. No. No, never. So I really, you know, Matt was like, you're going to be murdered for sure. Like, oh my God, I can't believe you're going. And I was like, you know what? I need this for my soul. You know, it was selfish, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to be honest, it was a selfish reason why I did it. And but I had talked to them for a while and they were like, all right, we're really going to do it. Here we go. And so I flew down. I got off the plane and I was like, whoa. Okay. I landed in Managua and they met me, and it just started this 4-day journey of something I'll never forget. I mean, it was just unbelievable to meet people who were living in these conditions, who had never had running water, mm-hmm. who never had a bathroom.
So you were building some type of...
We didn't build anything while I was there. I was visiting.
Oh, okay.
And so we went to a school that had never really had running water, and there were holes in the ground for girls. Boys didn't have a bathroom. Mm. And so there were all these beautiful children, and I met so many people that were just there working. I mean, it was a major... It's major issues. Like they were able to go to school, which is a blessing, but they had to leave by noon because the water dried up and there was no real bathroom. So if a boy had to go to the bathroom, he went home.
Yeah.
So what kind of education are they able to get?
Right.
When, you know, yeah. I mean, totally. You have to go to the bathroom. It's like, okay, bye. Have a good day. So while I was there, I met so many people, and I met people, and it was, you know, it was somewhat embarrassing because I was there filming, and, you know, and we were with this older gentleman who had literally, I felt like, saved the world. He was in Haiti during their catastrophe, mm-hmm. Madagascar during their catastrophe, rebuilding these people, you know, and then here I show up and there's a ribbon cutting ceremony and all these things. And we're visiting everyone and it's all lovely and everyone's getting a hug. And it was just, you know, and I'm singing Justin Bieber with a classroom full of like middle school boys and, you know, just like trying to spread a little joy and whatever and, you know, be able to get the word out. So what is amazing about the program is that they go in, they educate, they help set up little governments, because what people don't realize, to have running water, you have to have electricity and you have to pay for electricity. Mm-hmm. So if there's no organization, you're not paying for the electricity, right?
You can put the Band-Aid on, but it's not going to
Exactly. And also, they make everyone in the village build the wells themselves. Because if you can't build it, you can't fix it. Mm. And so sustainability is, I think, one of the most important things that they do. Because if you can't, you know, I mean, you could catch a fish and give it to them. But if you don't teach them how to fish, they're starving the next day. Mm-hmm. It's literally the same concept. So they have done such a fabulous job worldwide. And I went to this other school and they had nothing. No sanitation. No, I mean, not even that much. And there was a bucket behind the school. And there was a dog drinking out of it. The kids were washing their hands after they had gone to the bathroom in the woods and drinking the same water. And the livestock was coming over. And so you can imagine the issues the children had physically. You know, there were two kids. Literally, this boy was in school, which I loved, but he's crawling on his fists to come meet me. And then his sister was having the same issue. And I sat there with them. And, you know, it was a publicity trip. Like, I had to take pictures, you know. But again, embarrassed, because I was like, how dare I? And I didn't dare cry, because I just thought it was so disrespectful. Because they were doing the best they could with what they had. Mm-hmm. And I would never disrespect anyone like that. I just thought it was disgusting. And so we got through, and I met people that are saving lives. And we went to a village that had just gotten the water for the first time, and we had a ribbon cutting ceremony because they had never had the water, and they got the water that moment when I was there. They were waiting for me to come to do it. And it was just unbelievable. And, you know, it's like we're literally throwing the water in the air, which for them was like gold. But it was the first time ever that it was free. Mm-hmm. And everyone had water at their home. So a lot of times, which people don't realize, the water doesn't necessarily go into the home, but there's a spigot outside. But then they can, for the first time, they could have real sanitation.
Right. Yeah.
So that was unbelievable. And when I got on the plane, I had a breakdown. But I held it in.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lie. I got to the Chili's with the huge glasses of wine on my layover and had a breakdown at the Chili's.
It always happens at Chili's.
So I had to lighten up the story a little bit.
I have two things
that
note.
Yes.
It's funny that people won't drink water from their faucet. Like,
oh, it's
you know,
a joke. It's a joke.
I know a lot of people who have, like, you know, we have a Brita in our apartment, like in the fridge, but I always drink from the kitchen sink because I'm like, if in the middle of the night, or if it's not filled up, you know, I'm like thirsty.
Yeah,
you have the water right there.
Oh,
but it's funny that some people won't even drink out of their faucet when we have it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's fluoride in it. But anyways, and secondly, it's so hearing about that and then visiting Central America myself and just sort of thinking about that, it really makes you consider how
blessed we are.
And how far someone would go to put themselves and their children in a better situation, i.e. like crossing,
Mexico.
Yes, going through the desert. And I don't, you know, regardless of however you feel about the whole topic of immigration, which is like constantly on every newscast and online and whatever, it's a big topic of discussion here in Southern California specifically. But it's like you can understand why people do risk their lives to try and even the topic of like, so these kids go to school. What are they going to do for the rest of their lives? They're going to like work in a salt field or, you know, I mean, it's not, there
if
isn't,
lucky.
There just isn't
if lucky
yeah,
enough.
There just isn't like opportunity in the way that we have it there.
You are 100% correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even discuss the border. It's too upsetting.
Yeah. Well,
they're trying to save their lives. Sorry. They are. You know, and I understand there are a lot of issues and there's a lot of back and forth with it. And, you know, I just wonder if Melania was in the same situation, would she not do the same thing? And being an immigrant herself, and, you know, she was lucky. She was beautiful.
She is beautiful.
Beautiful. But she was lucky. So, and who knows her story, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and I see why she did what she did going there and defied him and everything.
Yeah.
Because she needed to.
Yeah.
You know, and on the other side, I understand what Mr. Trump's point is, but you got,
yeah,
they're human beings.
Totally.
You
not all people.
You can't disrespect life. You yeah. just can't.
Yeah. I guess it just brings it a little bit closer.
It
when
does.
You consider,
it
when
does.
You go somewhere like that and meet people and sort of hear about maybe their relative did come here. And
oh,
they're
I
sending
have
fr- back
I have
money
friends,
to them.
I have or, friends that literally you know. Crossed the river.
Yeah.
And their families
this,
because they were starving.
I watched a
they
documentary about I watched a documentary about these kids who were coming from Central America and riding on top of trains through like Guatemala, Mexico, literally riding on top of trains, like the roof, to get through Mexico, and then maybe they get here and then they're sent back and then they do it again and again, like, you know, multiple times.
Let me tell you. None of us know what we would do if we were in that situation. Well, I do. I'd be on that train, girl. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
I'd be on that train, no joke. That's why you can't blame the human condition. You just can't. These are people that want to live prosperous, happy, blessed lives. And they don't feel like they're going to survive. And they know what the life is here. It just is what it is. You know, it's like even I did a lot of talk shows after a lot of good came from that trip, by the way, besides just vanity stuff. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
So luckily after the trip, I got to do a lot of talk shows and I was so blessed to be on because people don't want to talk about this. They just don't. And it was amazing that I was able to go on because, you know, I especially went on in Texas because they're a big supporter, obviously. I mean, they're there. I mean, and a lot of the population is Central American. So, you know, talking about this and whatnot, it was like when you're homeless in America, you can go to the McDonald's. You can walk in, get water, use the public restroom. Now you can go to Starbucks, too. And use the restroom. There's no restroom for 150 miles. That's the difference.
Yeah.
And there's no services.
There's no trash services. There's
Thank
no,
you. Right.
like, just
exactly.
trash cans that are just magically
exactly.
appearing on the
exactly.
sidewalk.
Exactly. They're doing laundry on a rock and then drinking water that, you know, and then waiting for the water to come down the mountain. That's not a joke. You know, into a pool for them to get. I mean, it's such a different thing. Back to the blessing, and we can end with that. Because I was able to go, we made a short film. We were able to do a lot of talk shows, which was amazing, thankfully, to publicity team again. And from that, I got an email from the head of the program telling me that my trip ended up saving 500 families and getting enough money in the door from the publicity to get clean water and to build
That's
wells.
Great.
It was amazing. It was really amazing and worth every minute. Or is that incredible?
Doing it.
Attempting. Attempting.
You're about to hit your stride.
I hope so. I think so too. I feel
the
really
way
good
that
about
you
it.
You phrased it.
Oh,
earlier?
Who knows? I've always got some I'm always got some bullshit phrase. I'm
talking. You said something that I was like, let me use that.
Well, we
I
can listen. Remember. You can listen back, dear.
All right. Well, thank
when you're
you
editing
for...
all when you bleep out all my swearing.
Oh yeah. Did you cuss?
A couple times.
This is so bad. I feel like I hear it cuss words so much that
of course,
I don't even
can't
notice
turn on...
them. Just like in work.
Oh, maybe. Maybe one or two. One or two.
I really appreciate you being like, I don't know if you're always like in every conversation you bear certain things about your life, but
within reason.
I always appreciate when someone is willing to talk about certain subjects that are emotionally difficult for them because that's what I can I feel like personally I relate to that a lot, and it shows a lot about who you are. I think
if you're going to be out there publicly and you're asked questions about yourself, what is the point of talking if you don't have anything real to say?
Oh, for sure.
And you know what I mean? And so much of my brand and what I've been able to build is that I want to be able to inspire people to be who they are. I mean, you don't have to like me. You don't have to be, you know, a fan or any of these sort of things. But I want you to be able to pull something from my own human experience and turn it into yours, mm-hmm. and to be able to help, because you never know. I mean, it could have been one little thing that I said that some kid hears and survives, or a woman who thought she can't get out of a situation
totally
can now get out of a situation. You never know. You never know. Or a man. It doesn't really even matter, you know? So
and
I try to talk and live in my truth so other people will.
Yeah. That's I like that. And Misha, I feel like you should invest in a good, like, statement piece or something. Right?
Yes. Oh, and buy good clothes.
And buy good clothes.
And diamonds for Mr. Warburton.
That's
available
right.
online now. Just kidding. And read good magazines like Le Palme magazine on newsstands now, starring Leah Remini and Charlie Weber.
Charlie Weber. Thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you're listening to this on Audio Boom, don't forget you can also subscribe to Olympic and Bundy on Apple Podcasts if you have an iPhone, Google Play on Android, or on the Spotify and Stitcher app. And we would love for you to leave a 5-star rating and review. That really helps. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.